I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One is Mark and John's the other. They're just friends. They are not lovers. It's two old queens. It's two old queens. They're just sassy, not that mean. Two old queens. It's two old queens. Now shut up.
Hello.
Welcome to Two Old Queens. I'm John Flynn.
And I'm Mark Rennie. And wow, what a guest we have today.
What a guest we have today. So excited.
Some would say a legend.
Podcast royalty, maybe?
Perhaps. He's the host of Doughboys. And how did this get played? It's Nick Weiger.
Yay.
Hi.
Hi, Nick. How's it going?
Oh, great. I love a morning record. I don't know if this is... Yeah, so rarely is a podcast recorded in the AM. And I am more of a morning person, even though I was late today.
Not the morning's fault. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But it's just, I feel like I'm going to have a different energy than I normally do because I'm normally so tired when I'm doing a record because it's at night and I've like worked a full day and then I got to fucking talk about some bullshit for 90 minutes. Not that that's what we're going to do here. I'm very excited about our topic today. This is very important scholarly academic work.
climate change grief, heard about it. It's a real issue. Yeah. Scientists getting really depressed. I think I like the morning too. I get too tired at night. Like I have my stamina is less. The more the day goes on.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a morning person, but then like I'm tired, but then usually like an hour before I go to bed, I have this burst of energy where I'm super productive like an hour before I go to bed. But 3 or 4 hours before that, I'm doing nothing of any value.
Do you have trouble sleeping subsequently?
Nope. No, I'm someone, it drives my husband crazy because like if it takes me more than 5 minutes to fall asleep, that's rare.
Wow, that's amazing.
I've fallen asleep in the middle of a conversation with him, and not because the conversation was not interesting.
I'm like pretty low maintenance for most areas of my life, but when it comes to sleep, I need it dark, I need it cool, I need an open window with a breeze.
You need circulating air. Okay.
I need circulating air. I'll fall asleep to an episode of Lore. Those are great to fall asleep to.
Huh.
Those are my sleep habits.
Okay. Wait, what's Lore?
It's a fun podcast about like folklore. Like it's like urban legend, but then it'll give you like the actual history behind it.
Right.
Like someone found like a statue of an angel buried in the dirt. And then like, what is that about? And then it turned out a guy just planted it as a hoax. Just tried to make it like seem.
It was a whole podcast about that one thing.
Yeah. 120
wow,
episodes.
Check this out. Okay.
They got an Amazon Prime series. That's not very good.
Uh-oh.
You know, it's hard to make that jump from podcast to TV.
Yeah. It's the podcast sounds right up my alley. I'll check it out.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd like it. So we're talking about a big movie.
Very big movie.
Our
yes.
biggest movie.
A blockbuster.
Also the first of our movies. Well, no, actually it's our second now if I look at it. That's a really big franchise.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you love, I want to talk about franchises.
Yes.
Okay.
My awkward segue.
All right. Great.
What is your idea? Like in terms of like action adventure, summer temple, do you have an ideal franchise? Like, oh, that's like if people love a Fast and the Furious.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of why I wanted to talk about this specific movie is that I think this is one of the last of the franchises that hasn't been spun off to death. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like the Mission Impossible franchise, it's okay for me to say the movie.
Yeah, it's in the title.
Okay, the title. Keep it a secret. The Mission Impossible franchise, it's like they have like big, like tentpole installments every few years. You know, there's sometimes a lengthy break between installments, and they have the star, and they're like, you know, it doesn't feel like any of them are just like filler to like fill out the schedule. And I think like, you know, but I wouldn't call myself a Marvel skeptic, but I'm just not someone who sees all the Marvels. But it does feel like, yeah, they maintain a level of quality. But to me also, I'm like Doctor Strange, like Ant-Man 2. Like, to me, these are all the same. They're all like kind of like the same thing to me. Like, I don't know what the difference is as an outside observer. But like each Mission Impossible feels like an event. And I feel like the Star Wars movies used to feel like that. But now, because they're also going through the spun off to death phase where we're having like, you know, ones that are entries that are maybe just superfluous.
Well, they're slowing down, they say. I think they've gotten their nose bopped, would we say, a bit.
Solo was a misfire.
I think that Mission Impossible has also benefited by not having that many. Like, I think, like, already Fast and Furious has more, and that came out like years later.
Fast and Furious now, right?
But also, they lapped it. In terms of a franchise, from where they started to where they've ended up is crazy. Cause the first Fast and Furious is like a gritty kind of, you know, blue collar, you know, crime movie.
Right.
And now they are these super CGI. Idris Elba is like Superman now. He's like a cybernetic warrior in Hobbs and Shaw.
I thought you were also, because the way you started that, I thought you were talking about the Mission Impossible franchise. Because the first one is, you know, this Brian De Palma film that's kind of like, it's a little artier than your normal action movie. Mm. And it's kind of like a little bit of a slower paced espionage.
There's no gunfights.
Yeah, there's no gunfights. There are some spectacular action sequences, but it's like a different sort of animal. And the series has kind of evolved into this huge, just massive blowout thing with a bunch of action sequences strung together.
Now, which Mission Impossible is this?
This is six.
Six. And they're filming the next two right
more
now,
back to back.
Yeah, with the same director. But then and that's a whole departure from the way they had a different director each. You guys know this. I don't know. Your audience probably
know
knows
a lot of this.
So okay. I don't want to feel like I'm explaining things to film aficionados who already know it. But So, like the first five films were different directors, and then from the fifth installment on, they've stuck with Christopher McQuarrie, whose most famous credit prior to that was writing The Usual Suspects, and he's kind of taken over the franchise, and so he'll have just directed four installments by the time his run is over, which was like a bunch of standalone movies starring Tom Cruise with a different directorial eye each time, and then all of a sudden this new guy goes and takes the franchise in a different direction, and honestly elevates. Like, I think his movies are the best ones.
Fallout is like peak.
Fallout is so good.
I feel like it's the one they cracked it.
Yeah.
On that one. For like a horror franchise, it's kind of the same reasons why for horror, Nightmare on Elm Street is the best franchise.
Oh, interesting.
Each one feels different than the other one. Each one has a different director. Each one, good or bad, each one feels like unique from all the other one. Like, there's a gothic one. Like, there's like a dumb trash one, you know what I mean? But then there's the gay one, and then there's Dream Wars, which is actually like the cool,
it's like a superhero
sci-fi
one.
Epic-y one. So I like that each one feels, whereas like the Friday the 13th franchise, those all kind of blur together for me. Like, there's anonymity to the directing where they don't each individually stick out to me.
I gotcha. Did you like the Freddy reboot? The one that
no!
Did,
yeah. This is terrible.
It's not right yet.
Like, I get you gotta lean in, or you gotta call out, like, yes, he was a child rapist,
right?
But like, you don't have to like revel in it.
Why are we focusing on the bad parts of what he's done?
Right,
it's not what makes Freddy fun.
Well, Freddy is fun. Well, in the first one, he's not that funny, but he's truly scary, but he's still, you know, he's still got his quips.
Yeah,
Freddy's the only horror person that talks, I think. Besides, like, a Hannibal Lecter or
I guess,
something.
Sure.
Chucky
talks.
Chucky's pretty verbose.
But yeah, some of them are mute assassins. Mm-hmm. I love Fred, and I also, like, I just love the punsmanship of Freddy. Like, that was, like, a big part
of
the franchise.
He's a wordsmith.
I love it.
You could see him having, like, a page-a-day calendar.
Right.
Or, like, a common Mad Magazine, maybe.
And then also, like, I just, like, you know, I would watch those movies as a kid, and you'd see, like, oh, this guy loves to eat sandwiches. How's Freddy gonna figure out how to... a sandwich to kill him in his dream.
His greatest strength becomes his greatest weakness.
Yeah, he starts eating, he's eating a tongue sandwich and it's his own tongue.
Gross. <Yeah. laughs>
So I have not seen the first couple of these movies. I think I've only seen the last two Mission Impossibles. So how much is it, like, watching it this time, I was like, these sort of are like James Bond movies in a way.
Yeah.
And like, they could continue without Tom Cruise. And didn't they try to sort of have Jeremy Renner take over for a while?
And then that Ghost Protocol, they introduced Jeremy Renner. It's like, maybe Jeremy Renner in case Tom gets bored. Then I think Tom is just double down.
Renner's just on deck, I feel like, to take over a franchise.
For Jason Bourne, yeah, he did that.
Yeah, he could be the new, Mission Impossible guy. He's going to have an adult contemporary career or whatever.
Which is that is not going to be good. No. I don't think Jeremy Renner is going to have good music. Has anybody heard any of this album?
No, I haven't.
No.
What's it called? Like Whispers in the Sunset or something?
Sounds perfect.
they sort of tease that, but I think it was always going to be a Tom Cruise thing because, like, Ghost Protocol, they introduced like a whole team, and it's kind of almost like they're kind of like, look at the we're they got Paula Patton, and Paula Patton's only in that installment, but they kind of tee her up like she's going to be a big part of the franchise moving forward. And then I think they recentered it, and we're just sort of like, these have to be Tom Cruise movies.
Well, and Ving Rhames.
And Ving Rhames
has been there from the beginning.
Someone needs to wear a fedora in these movies.
Ving rules, and I love that, like, if you watch his trajectory over the course, because he's in the first one, and he's in every installment, and he just gradually gets less and less mobile. And I wonder if that's a thing he's just like negotiated into
his
contract.
Be in his 70s.
Yeah, I want to take 8 steps total in the course of this movie. Just he's always seated in the van, or
we're losing his steps.
Yeah, exactly.
The Jeremy Renner album is called Heaven Don't Have a Name.
Jesus Christ.
Is that a working title, or is that, are we locked
into
that?
It's not working, but it's a title. John, do you have a favorite, like, franchise? Like, if you were like, oh, there's a new one of these movies, like, I also will see any. I need them to come out with a new Final Destination. I think those are great. An Alien franchise, minus the Alien versus Predator. Alien is a fantastic franchise. Even Prometheus and Alien Covenant. I love those two.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a movie franchise. I'll see any Star Wars garbage they set out, but I'm not like excited about any of them anymore. It feels more just like, this is the homework I have to do. I don't know. You know what I mean? It just feels like, all right, I'm going to see it, but I can't imagine a day where I'm not going to go see a Star Wars movie. I do like the Marvel movies. I do see them, even though, like, they all become like another Marvel movie in my head.
To me, the Marvel movies are like my favorite TV series.
Yeah.
Like, cause there's like you know what I mean? Like, they're just like, this is just my favorite season of a TV show. And then Endgame was like the finale. And like, they really stuck that landing.
I saw Endgame and I had not seen any of the other Avengers.
Oh, really?
How was that? Confused.
Yeah. That would make sense.
There was a lot of context that was absent. A lot of callbacks where I was like, I don't know what this is referencing.
That would be like jumping in and just like watching the finale to Lost without ever seeing it, going like, this show's not very good.
I had to see it because I was working a job where we were going to like they were going to write a parody of it. So I was like, well, I have to have some context for what this thing is.
Sure.
So I went and saw it and I sort of like pieced it together, but I had to reference Wikipedia a bunch afterwards. Yeah, the Marvels, though, I do admire the craftsmanship, and I do admire like how they're like, it's kind of amazing that they weaved all these different interlocking pieces and they all kind of work together.
It's like a triumph of scheduling.
It really is. Yeah. It's very impressive. Just as a production feat. I like Star Wars. I agree with you. I would watch all the Star Trek movies basically until the JJ reboots. I was like, I love seeing the Star Treks because that's just like a fun, a fun
group of characters. Yeah,
exactly. Honestly, it's kind of a Lord of the Rings guy, and I would say something of a Hobbit defender.
Really, okay.
Those movies are unnecessary, but they're kind of fun.
But you know what? Most movies are unnecessary.
Very movies are necessary.
They may need a movie.
No, it is like because I watched the Hobbit movies, and I watched all of Hobbit 1, and I was just kind of like, all right. And then I saw Hobbit 2 in theaters, and there's a sequence which I've talked about a bunch. Other places, but there's a sequence where they all the dwarves hop in barrels.
Sure.
They're taking a barrel chase down a river, and it's just like, this should be a ride. This is the most amazing, dazzling sequence I've seen. I can't believe how amazing, and I like that these movies exist because this exists. Yeah. The sequence is so great.
You want a barrel river rapids ride.
Is there a Lord of the Rings world at any theme park anywhere? That seems like a missed opportunity.
Exactly. Open it up.
Come on, New Zealand.
Come on.
You need all those sheep? Yeah. Get them out of there.
I think you can see like sets in New Zealand if you visit. Like I think you can see locations, but it's not the same as living within a theme park attraction.
No.
Hmm. Well, we'll see how Galaxy's Edge goes. And then if that's successful.
Yeah.
No one's going right now, they say.
Wait, really? No one's going to Galaxy's Edge?
As of now, it's what, mid-July when we record this. It's pretty, the parks are empty. I think they've overcompensated too much. They tried so hard to keep people away by hiking prices.
Right.
Every pass is on blackout. Except for like the $1,000, $2,000 one. And so I think no one is like coming because like, and the big ride doesn't open until January.
Yes.
Oh. So I think everyone's staying away. So like they're having all these like staffing cuts and like all these hotels were like, they staffed up because everyone thought they were going to be swarmed with people. But people are just like, oh, well, it's prohibitively expensive right now. And it's everyone's saying how crowded it's going to be. So everyone's staying away.
Interesting.
Oh, boy.
Can I talk about this is a tangent, but another franchise that I enjoy is and you know, obviously there's a video of irony here, but like the Air Bud franchise and then how that turned into the Buddies franchise is so bananas. If you actually like,
look at
like,
Fast and Furious going to Hobbs and Shaw was crazy. Yeah.
Right.
What do you see? Space Buddies.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. They're puppies are up on a space station with a cosmonaut.
Are there like hardcore fans who are like, man, they've lost the heart of the original Air Bud. Like people are really, God damn it.
But they got it back with Treasure Buddies. Like that's like,
that's what Air Buds are about.
There's a dog, I think, named B-Dog, and his whole thing is that he...
Does he wear sunglasses?
He does wear sunglasses. Okay. He's like a white rapper, basically. He's really...
Oh, good. Representation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's basically his persona, and it's very obnoxious. But then there's another dog who's just like supposed to be the fat dog, but he just looks like a golden retriever puppy, and he farts all the time. He keeps eating and farting. That also might be B-Dog. He might have both of those personality attributes. I can't remember.
A white rapper, and he likes to eat and fart.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hat on a hat on a hat.
But there's my buddy Paul, we were watching one of the Buddies movies at his place, and there's a scene where their buddies are just in... The buddies are a bunch of golden retrievers who I guess are Air Bud's kids. And they're just, yeah, cause that the Buddies franchise began because it was Air Buddies. And that was like kind of after they did Air Bud golden receiver, Air Bud, world pup, Air Bud.
Oh my God.
He did a volleyball one. I think it like spikes back or something like that.
Sure.
They just abandoned the dog puns at one point. And then, and so like they do like seven Air Buds and then they spin it off where his puppies are playing basketball, and then they spin off the puppies into the puppies are just going on adventures. Like the puppies just explore a haunted house.
There's a Santa Buddies.
Buddies, yeah.
Spooky Buddies.
Spooky Buddies, yeah.
And then Treasure Buddies.
Yeah, so we were watching and Space Buddies, which you mentioned. We were watching Treasure Buddies, and there's a sequence where they're like in the Sahara Desert, and there's just like a bunch of golden retriever puppies in a hot air balloon flying over the desert, and they're all like they all have voiceover. As this is happening, and I'm just watching this flavor of all that we're just like, they have no idea. These dogs have no idea what's going on. They have no context that they're in a movie, just sitting in a basket in the sky above in the sunset. It's just like,
Gwyneth Paltrow has no idea what's going on.
Right. She doesn't know.
Is there any difference between Gwyneth Paltrow and a space buddy? I say no. Wow, those poor dogs.
Yeah, and a bunch of them got parvo on one of them and died, which is
God.
Horrific.
This is in the movie or on set?
Yeah, that was a plot point.
That was Sick Buddies. Outbreak Buddies? I don't know. I got more. Wow. Do you have a favorite? You don't have a horror franchise?
I mean, I agree. I love the Nightmare on Elm Street. I think those are the most fun ones.
I would also say, looping back to Alien, the worst Alien movie is better than most movies.
Mm.
Okay, which would you say is the worst Alien movie?
Alien 3.
Okay.
You think that's the worst one? Interesting.
Out of the, not with Alien, it's just the most of a slog.
Oh,
and like Ripley is not in it for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But in Resurrection, she's like the clone of Ripley with like alien DNA, and she's like funny in it. And she doesn't have she doesn't have the burden of Alien 3 and all that. Like she's just like a funny, witty, like badass. And then there's that amazing scene where she goes in and sees all her clones, and there's that one really like fucked up one that's like all like
mutated
and just going like, kill me. And then she kills it by using a blowtorch on it, which is like the most painful way
but they did,
to put someone out of their misery.
And the second one, wasn't there a lot of blowtorching going on in that one?
But if you're trying to kill someone out of mercy, would you trying to mercy kill
setting
someone?
Them
away,
setting them on fire.
Setting them on fire.
That's the only tool you have.
That's true.
I don't think it was. But right. It's the most visually pleasing one.
There
I
you
guess.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like your dying, paralyzed wife in the hospital. Instead of putting a pillow over her face, you like bash her with a claw hammer.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man.
Put a bunch of nickels in her. This is what she wanted. All right, well, let's get into it. Let's get
now that we've steamrolled our wives.
All right. We've kind of already said, I think we know why, Nick, we asked you like a movie you're passionate about. I think we understand yes. why you chose Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yes, I mean, I was overthinking at first because you guys are like let's a movie you're passionate about, a movie you want to discuss. And I was just like, oh man, I feel like I was like, should I talk about something from my childhood or like some like animated movie that meant a lot to me or like some like really smart documentary? And then I was just like, you know what? I honestly think, even though it came out last year, right? Or two
yeah,
years ago?
Last year.
I think Mission Impossible Fallout is my favorite movie.
Wow.
Okay. I think it's like I think it's number one on my list.
Okay.
And I recency bias possibly, I don't know, but I just like, I have so much fun watching that movie. And it's just like, like every scene and sequence delivers. I don't feel like it ever drags. I love action films. I love that it's just like so much work went into it. Like yeah. just such a, like a precisely crafted and constructed and edited film. And I love Tom Cruise. I know he's something sure. of a problematic figure, I guess, because of his ties to the Church of Scientology, but I do just think he's fucking awesome. He's just such a great actor.
He's one of our last movie stars.
He is, yeah.
He really is.
I was, by the way, but that does make me think we had Moneyball was just on TV last night and we were just watching it, me and my wife, and like, I was just like, every time Brad Pitt was on screen, I've seen this movie a bunch, but I would just like, put my phone down just so I could look at Brad Pitt. I was like, oh my god, there's the movie stars are just like, you just want to look at them.
Yeah, there's something about that.
That it factor. Isn't that what they call it? The it factor?
It is one of the things they say. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Legend. He is one of those, he's a looker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very handsome, but it's more than that too. There's just something about like
charisma.
Looking at you is just pleasant.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen Fallout?
I saw it in theater. I've seen it 5 times, I believe.
Wow.
And I saw, cause I don't go to theaters very often anymore. And I've seen, I think, 3 movies in theater this year.
Wow.
And I saw Mission Impossible Fallout in theaters 4 times.
Wow.
Because okay. I just like, I
movie
just
pass
wanted-
was still happening.
A lot of free time.
I just wanted to go back. I was like, I got to see it again. And I saw it on the, I saw it in the, whatever the big IMAX presentation
sure.
was. I saw it in 4DX.
Oh,
which is,
your chair shakes.
Yeah. Have you guys seen a movie in 4DX?
I haven't.
I
want
to. I saw the previous Mission Impossible with John Gabris in that situation.
Okay. Yeah. It's fun because my buddy Jordan Morris saw like one of the worst X-Men, whatever that one is, like X-Men Apocalypse or something,
sure.
in 4DX, and he came out and he's like, that movie's awesome! Just because it's like, it's a ride. Your chair is shaking, and they're blowing steam at you. Like, you get like water spritzed in your face. It's like insane.
You smell like Oscar Isaac afterwards. I wanted to see the Meg in 4DX. The Meg seemed like the ultimate 4DX movie to me. Anything that could be like a theme park attraction.
Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, I saw Mission Impossible in 4DX, a blast. And then I saw it, I think, one more time in theaters, and just a conventional presentation, just to see it again, because it is just such a feat of movie making.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
I should quickly say, came out 2018, directed by Christopher McQuarrie. It stars, Tom Cruise, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, Rebecca Ferguson, Sean Harris, Michelle Monaghan, and Alec Baldwin, and Henry Cavill, Vanessa Kirby, and
Hell
Angela
yeah.
Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if I had to sum up the plot, which is kind of impossible, it's just Ethan Hunt and his team have to intercept a gang of the apostles who are like from, they were led by this guy, I forget his name. What's his name?
Solomon Lane.
Yes. He's been captured, so his group is now calling themselves the apostles. They're like former like secret agents, essentially, who have now gone rogue. And there's also this other guy, John Lark, who's like an anarchist, essentially. And there he's trying to prevent them from like getting together nuclear weapons. That's like the IMF's deal, yeah. I guess.
And they don't know who John Lark is for like basically the first act of the movie. Pretty early on, you get tipped off that it's Henry Cavill, who's working inside of the CIA.
Right.
Who's awesome in this movie.
He's great.
He's so good. Fucking good.
I didn't really like Henry Cavill until I saw Mission Impossible Fallout.
Me neither.
I have to say, I agree.
Yeah.
You had never seen this before.
I had not seen this movie. I watched it yesterday for the first time.
And what did you think?
I thought it was great. I got confused at some points with the plot, but then I also sort of thought, I don't care.
Yes.
Because everything that they're doing is, they're doing so well that it's sort of like, who cares who's on whose side? Like, they're going to switch in 10 minutes anyway.
It's like complaining about The Book and Cats when those songs are so wonderful.
Exactly. When they're dancing in those leotards, who cares about what they're talking about? Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But I think there's a lot of similarities between like a musical and action films in that they are absolutely. Like cinema in its purest form.
Yeah.
There are things you cannot replicate in any other medium.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just, really is what strings together the set pieces enough to keep my interest and not make me tune out. And I think that's definitely the case here. And there's not a lot of downtime. There's not a lot of like long seek. I feel like a lot of action movies, just even ones you like, are just like, okay, I'm watching these two people just have a conversation.
Here's where they have to get information. Yeah,
exactly. The exposition is coming out. The Clancy slideshow, they call it, where you're just like, you're in a boardroom and you're watching just like a bunch of, you're looking at a bunch of submarine blueprints. Yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah.
it though. I do find this one's opening when he gets his mission from, you know, from the IMF and the secret recording, that hologram.
Yes.
Yeah. That sequence is like so exciting to me for some, like there's a cool like music undertone and just delivering this like glop of information, pure exposition, but somehow it's still, I find it very exciting, that sequence.
Right. Another thing that I thought was interesting too, because they had that whole thing, and then they had like the scene where they're like pretending to do good cop, bad cop with that guy, and then it's like, he wasn't actually. And after that is when the opening credits happen.
I love a prologue. No one does prologues anymore.
17 minutes before the opening credits. It was
fucking
insane.
Awesome. Yeah. It's so long. And then you forget that they haven't shown the credits yet, and they show them, you're like, this, I'm so in.
So many movies don't show opening credit. Like, yeah. I love, that's why James Bond movies are great, I think, because you get the fun prologue, and then you go straight into an awesome title sequence.
And like, with a song.
Get like, a nice overture.
Exactly. Oh, Seal singing it this time. Okay. it is like the overture, especially in the Mission Impossible franchise, because they show clips from what's going to happen in the movie. It's very like old TV serial sort of way of presenting things. And so like you'll see sequences from the helicopter chase in like brief blips.
Right.
And then you see that in the third act. It's awesome. But yeah, that also brings me to, you mentioned Christopher McQuarrie and, you talked about the exposition, which is also a cool element in the previous entry, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which was my favorite Mission Impossible prior to Fallout. So this is also the first entry that has like a consistent narrative thread. From what, it's not just the same
Solomon
director.
Solomon Lane's the villain in Rogue Nation.
Solomon Lane is the villain in two entries back to back. So the Apostles are a thing that is introduced, I think, maybe at a different name. I think they are called the Rogue Nation in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I think they are
aren't they all like former IMF agents? That's
exactly.
Because they take over the record. And that when he's listening in Rogue, or is that Ghost Protocol?
No, like, that is Rogue Nation. Right? Yeah, they take over the jazz record, and that's the misdirection. Where he's like, you know, the gas goes in the room. He thinks he's getting an IMF briefing, but it's like the.
I love that hospital scene, the CNN scene where they're tricking, because that is essentially, that is like pure, that is what I want in a Mission Impossible.
Oh, I love
where they fool someone into believing the reality is one thing.
Did it get you? Because it got me on the first viewing.
It did get me, I think, about 3/4 of the way.
Yeah.
I was, first it got me, but then I was like, they're having Wolf Blitzer behave in the most insane way. Like, this makes zero sense. And he's like, I've just been handed this manifesto that I have to. I was like, what? I was like, and I wasn't sure if it was like, and also like before
that to Anderson Cooper, if there's a manifesto.
Well, honestly, like before that too, I was also thinking like when Wolf Blitzer showed up, I was like, is there a newscaster today who will not play themselves in a movie?
I think there, that's a good question.
I don't know.
I don't think there is, and I think we all suffer for it.
Yeah. Wolf is a go-to, and I honestly think, like, I agree, there could have been a more believable newsreader they could have gotten, but it's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
it's
Wolf. Yeah, it was also like fun. And yeah. I was like, when it happened, I was like, oh, okay, of course.
I also love in any of these Mission Impossible, like whenever they trick them, there's always, I mean, talk about loving a reveal. Like they're like, they love, there's a moment of like bitchiness and Warren's like, we got you. As opposed to, wouldn't it be more effective maybe to let them believe this thing?
Keep it going.
There's a form like, all right, we got it. And then the walls lift up dramatically.
I love it.
I mean, it's such a fun sequence.
They love taking off those fake faces.
Yes.
This one has almost the least amount of faces, I feel.
Yeah, I think.
Is there one movie that has no faces?
No, they all have a mask gag. And they didn't start doing the voice changing until the second entry. The first one, it was just. I don't think they did it in the first one. And the second one was when they introduced the thing where you could basically just take on someone's entire essence, face-off style. But. I think Christopher McQuarrie, because I listened to there's a 7-hour podcast.
The Empire podcast.
It's awesome. And I think he talks about just like using that like minimally. Like he doesn't want to overuse
it. It's such a cheat. If you start using it, it's like, you know.
Anyone could be anyone at any time.
It's like drinking a Red Bull. Once you start, if you start relying on that crutch, you're going to be using it all. But then like regular coffee's not going to cut it. I think there's also the great whole entire action sequence where in Paris,
yes,
where they have to steal Solomon Lane. It's like a 20-30 minute like pure action sequence where like they have to like get him from like this convoy and like almost a Dark Knight-esque style convoy, and they rescue him from that, and then there's like a motorcycle chase, and then it just goes on and on and on. It's just like pure cinema.
It's
like
great.
I was watching this movie with subtitles on just because it helps me for the plot sometimes.
Right.
But sure. You notice there's such long stretches where there's no dialogue.
I do the same. This is a tangent, but I do the same thing with action movies because the audio mix is like, I don't want to be an asshole to my neighbors. And so sure. If you listen, if you make the dialogue audible, the explosions and music cues are so fucking deafening.
Yeah,
I just like have it at a reasonable volume and then the dialogue's kind of muttered and I have it on subtitles.
Oh, good tip.
Yeah.
I think it must be so fun for them to just sit around and figure out like, what haven't we done? All right. What if it's two helicopters? A motorcycle on top of a van? Like they just constantly reinventing
themselves.
Don't
you think for the next, like they got to go to space in this next one, right? They're going to space.
I don't know how they're going to top the stunts they have in this one because they're so like they cover so much of the globe and they're so over the top that maybe they are going to space. Maybe they are.
I think they have to. I actually am looking forward to when Fast and the Furious has to go into space.
I mean, but that's
because they're going to have to drive through a black hole at some point if they keep making these movies.
Time travel and Fast. We got to do a time heist. We got to go steal the formula for Coronas. That's one thing I love about these Mission Impossible as opposed to the Fast and Furious and the Marvels, that so much is shot on the actual locations.
Yes,
not a lot of visible green screen, not a lot of like fake environments. Like I'm sure there is extensive CGI use. They add cars to like the motorcycle chases and all that stuff, but like the real location just sells it. Like there's something the brain recognizes reality.
I think McQuarrie, and this is again from the Empire podcast, which is if anyone is a Mission Impossible fan and hasn't listened to it, I'd highly recommend it. He talks about that he basically wanted to operate from an outline. He kind of just had like a treatment for the movie, and then they scouted locations, and then he wrote the script, the set pieces to those locations.
Okay.
So they kind of like they discovered, you know, that crazy. I don't know what exactly it is with what you describe the geographical formation, but the place where they fight the cliff at the climactic battle, they found that in like Norway or wherever it was, and then they justified, you know, the Pakistan, the Kashmir region, like they justified that like retroactively for the story. They figured all that stuff out because these are just places they wanted to film in, and that it is really cool. It adds a lot that it's not just actors looking. They've been told what their eye line is, and they're trying to sell it as much as possible as they're looking into space.
And some soundstage in Atlanta supposed to be Planet Titan.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a gorgeous movie.
Like, it looks great.
The location, it's like porn for location scouts. Like, it is so gorgeous. So much of it is just so beautiful. I was upset that I was watching it on my TV and not on a movie screen.
I thought porn for location scouts were my Swedish wall calendar.
Can be both.
Can be both.
But I mean, every place, every like news setting was just like breathtaking and gorgeous.
This is also like the most Michael Mann-esque of these movies. I feel like tonally, because it feels like I just watched Heat the last. Once you watch Heat, you're like, oh, this is every action movie. Like, this is all of Christopher Nolan's entire career in a lot of ways.
Right.
Goes back to, and this one feels the most like Heat to me. If rewatch Heat, if you haven't seen Heat in a while, rewatch it. It holds up. Because this is has that kind of the ticking clock element. I don't know what else to call it. Well, we all love Mission Impossible, but I don't know if we told you this. We have a very elaborate and Byzantine scoring system.
Oh, boy.
Because we are rating movies to see how gay they are. Because we are looking for the gayest movie ever made.
Gotcha.
Let me recap where we stand right now.
Okay.
I'm just going to do the top five. All right. Our top, and this is because each week the number of points you can get increases. So we have to go by a percentage of total possible points.
Okay.
All right. This doesn't make any
sense.
It's
very dense.
No, I love it.
So number five with 22.71% possible points is The Third Man. Number four with 36.67, The Kids Are All Right. Number three with 45%, The Muppets Take Manhattan. Number two with 58.94%, A Surprise, Hoosiers. Number one, gayest movie of all time, as of right now, is The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Wow.
So we will, we're going to.
Wait, what did you say was number three?
Kids Are All Right. Oh, Kids Are All Right is number three. I don't know. We'll worry about it later.
Wait, get two Muppets you read in there?
No, no, no. One we only got one Muppet. You said the Muppet Thing twice.
I think
you
said Muppets Take Manhattan?
Yes.
I don't know.
Which one's 9 to 5?
9 to 5 is 2.
Yeah.
58.94.
Okay.
Oh, did I get something wrong?
I think you were looking at a different column.
Look, it's hard. It's an Excel sheet. I don't know. I got bad eyes.
It's also, it's hard to keep the Muppets movies straight. It's kind of like the...
Excuse me?
It's kind of like the Buddies franchise. You got to...
Absolutely
respectfully disagree.
They went to Treasure Island. They took Manhattan. They're following
the
a bird.
The Buddies never took Manhattan. How dare you? All right. Our first category, homoeroticism.
So on a scale of 1 to 100,
what would you score Mission Impossible homoeroticism? Well, Henry Cavill's slacks in that bathroom fight.
Henry Cavill's
mustache.
Yes.
Yes.
I tried to pull that off. After I saw that movie, like the second time I saw it, I was like, I think I could do that. And I had a fuller beard at the time. So I tried to just shave the sides to have a little bit of stubble and keep the mustache.
Sure.
It did not work on me. for me in the bathroom.
I think you have that upper lip. But you don't, because I think not a lot of guys have that much. I was like, he's the Tom Selleck of 2019.
Yes, he looks great in that mustache, and also too, it's because there was that whole thing where, I'm sorry, I'm derailing the score.
Please, no, please. That's what it's here for.
This is not just my observation, but. At the same time, contemporaneously, they were shooting the
Superman.
Superman movie, Justice League, yes. And they had to fucking CGI his mustache out. But he needed the mustache for this movie. It's like, he's not as good of a villain without the mustache.
Absolutely.
It helps so much.
And also, fuck you, Justice League, get your movie together. It's not our fault that you screwed up.
Exactly.
Deny us that mustache, Justice League. Another reason to not like that movie.
That whole bathroom fight, I think, is, dude just like brawling in a men's room. And also too,
there's a weird gay joke.
They make
in
a gay
there.
Joke in
with
there.
Tom like, Cruise that? Of all
yes,
people.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was that the or nerve. If they, the joke was they wanted to do cocaine with them. Because I saw that many guys' legs not moving so much, I would think they're doing cocaine.
Oh, I thought they were making a gay
you're
joke.
In the,
I mean,
the
is
show.
It really an either or situation?
It's not either or. It could be, but it does not have to be.
Does one kind of go hand in hand?
I don't know if that's
dick
true.
In hand. You never done a rail off a cock? I haven't. I swear.
I think it's this movie's pretty stacked with hunks. Like Tom Cruise, a classic hunk, and Henry Cavill, super duper hunky in this one. The fake John Lark, pretty hunky. The guy they have the martial arts fight with in the bathroom.
Also, the White Widow's brother.
White Widow's brother, yeah.
Zuko. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
his name. He's kind of hunky.
Yeah.
So what would you give this on a score of 1 to 100?
Me?
Yeah. Because then we take the average.
Okay. I will say I'm going to give it a 68.
Wow.
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. That is your because we're going to chime in as well.
Okay,
and then we take the average.
Great.
For me, it's all about Henry Cavill with this one. I think Tom Cruise is one of those guys, he's definitely attractive. I can't deny that. He's never really done it for me. I also think, this isn't too controversial. I think he looks a lot like Tig Notaro in this movie.
He's had some sort of work done.
You said, he's had some fillers, some plastic surgery.
But it's good work.
Very good work. Who's ever done his neck? His neck, like his, like he has no like saggy double chin.
Yes.
So whoever's done that.
A genius. Give them the great, Nobel Prize.
Not paid enough. For me, it's all about Henry Cavill. I will give it, I'll say 75.
75?
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was worried I went too high.
I think I would need to see actual butt maybe for some.
I will admit one thing I did yesterday. When they're fighting on the mountaintop, there's a thing where like they both slide off, but there's like 1 second where like Henry Cavill's like sliding off the cliff. I'm trying to like do this on his back and like his shirt rides up just a little bit. Yeah. I paused just to check.
Did you catch it?
I didn't. I just saw like that part in those power alleys, but it was
power alleys.
Yeah. You know, when those right. were like V's? Really cut. Yeah. Yeah. Those V's on the sides. Yeah.
Wow.
It'd be
power.
Great if, it'd be great if there was like two frames where his like full hog will flop down his pants.
It was hard during the action with Tom Cruise.
He was wrestling with Tom Cruise on top of a mountain. You'd be hard.
I'm going to give it 65.
Okay, why 65?
I don't know. It's pretty homework. It could be more, I think.
Sure.
If we're going to put it in the upper echelon, I need to have like some shirtlessness or
right.
something.
Okay.
I don't know. He's also, Tom Cruise is not shirtless in this movie.
That's
correct.
True.
He does
that's
not
true.
I also have a theory as to why he does all his own stunts, because he's a Scientologist and he's like the upper levels.
Mm.
So who could be better than him to do these stunts? Because he is the ultimate personification of man and Scientology. So why would he defer to someone else to do something that he could do?
That makes total sense. I will also say I worked with a person who was the line producer on Mission Impossible. Rogue Nation, the fifth entry, loved Tom Cruise. She said that he was like the hardest working person in any field she's ever worked with. And not only does he do his own stunts, he does his own inserts, which is if you're not someone who knows what that is, that's like a hand grabbing for a coffee cup or just like a foot stepping on a gas pedal. Like it's just like most of the time that's just like they'll do a stand in or something like that. Right. They'll shoot that with a second unit. But Tom is like, that's acting. I want to be the guy turning the doorknob. So like every time you see like a limb. And his face isn't in frame, that's still Tom Cruise, which is, to me, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's why the hand for the door is always coming up from really low behind. Yeah. Reaching up. All right. Oh, is Ethan Hunt a good actor? Because in that opening scene with CNN, like, let me have if I just need one moment with him, like, I don't know if I buy this.
Yeah.
But is Tom Cruise is a better actor than Ethan Hunt?
That's true, but that's like a layer to his performance, maybe.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Just the thought
I had. He's a good actor for an IMF agent.
He's the when they have their talent show at the end of every year. Also, Alec Baldwin getting a few licks in on Henry Cavill. Like, that, they were giving him an olive branch there. Like,
yeah. Right.
Well, also, you could tell, I feel like Alec Baldwin's one of those guys, like, obviously, he's been bigger and I was like, oh, he's been on Slim Fast. Like he clearly he had that look of like, I've just lost a lot of weight recently because I knew I was going to be in this movie.
I took a bunch of tapeworms.
Yeah.
Apparently there's one line of his dialogue that's 80 yard and Alec Baldwin was only available remotely, so he recorded on his phone.
Oh,
and it's in the final cut.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what the line is?
I don't know what the line is, but I guess if you watch the director's commentary, McQuarrie will point it out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I got the director's commentary.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next category. Actual gay characters. 0 to 100.
I don't think there are any actual gay characters in this.
I don't think anyone's sexuality is specified.
Well, White Widow is horny for everybody.
She's horny for everybody. Yeah.
She's also Max's daughter from the first one.
That's right. Yeah.
That's like a fan theory. Mm-hmm. That's real.
Well, she says she mentions Max in like one line of dialogue. So there is a connection there.
Vanessa Redgrave.
I'm familiar.
I mean, they're in Paris, so we could assume there are people there, but not actual characters of the movie.
Yeah. This is, I mean, there's the simmering sexual tension between Rebecca Ferguson and Tom Cruise. And that's basically the only sort of romantic element that goes on in the movie, besides Vanessa Kirby's The White Widow's unrelenting horniness. I don't know. This is like a zero, right?
Yeah, I think I have to give this one a zero.
Sorry.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately for us. All right. Our next category, camp factor. 0 to 100. How campy is Mission Impossible Fallout?
I don't know if I'm the best judge of this, because like
wearing a Minions t-shirt.
That's true. but I just love Minions. I legit love the Minions. I legit love Mission Impossible. Like, I guess it is kind of campy.
Reloading his arms.
Yeah, that's campy. I don't know. I guess I just love it unironically. I think it's
sure,
awesome.
Yeah. Sure.
But it does have some elements. I'm just going to say right down the middle, I'm going to give it a 50, which 50. Is maybe a cop
50.
Out.
Yeah. 50.
That's that pretty big.
Is that big?
That's a half campy movie.
That's three times as campy as What About Bob.
Wow. Okay. I misunderstood the scoring, system.
Half as campy as 9 to 5.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
You could abs. This is your score.
I can do it. Whatever you want.
You could keep it 50.
Keep it at 50.
Keep it at 50. Keep it at 50.
John, what do you? How campy was it when you were watching it yesterday from your couch?
I know we're really debating what camp means.
I think if
days.
You saw in 40X, it would be campy.
Maybe sure.
If you see in 40X, it's automatically that's like 25 right there.
Well, also like ramming a helicopter with another helicopter.
Excuse
like,
me. Yeah,
insane.
Yeah, it doesn't, to me, camp feels like you're like over, like emphasizing something like out of proportion of like how, like, you know what, does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, it's like, you're really obsessed about this certain thing where it's like, what are you
playing
talking
something
about?
Low stakes, high stakes.
Yeah, yeah. Which I don't think, I wouldn't call this a campy movie. There's definitely some things that I would say are like ridiculous, but I wouldn't say that they're, you know what I mean?
Like, I gotcha.
Like if the White Widow sang during her, like when we first see her, when we go in the nightclub, when we first see her, like having that intimate lounge.
It seemed like at one point, it did seem like the set from Dick Tracy to me at some point. It seemed like she was doing Breathless Mahoney. If she had done a number, then yes, I would give it more.
She had done a number while killing people with a switchblade. Mm-hmm. Now that's camp.
Yeah. I'll give it maybe a 10.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 7. So that gives an average of 22.33. Still higher, campier than The Third Man.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, our next category. We got a lot of categories, don't you worry.
I love it.
Makeover
more
montage.
More categories, more math, please. This is right up my alley.
Makeover montage.
Makeover montage.
0 to 100. There's not a lot of montage in this one.
I don't think so. There's just action sequences.
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing I can think of is when they have that... They kind of have that dream sequence where he's thinking about how the heist could go, where he has to murder a bunch of cops.
That's really well done.
It is really well done.
There's no sound effects. It's just a musical score.
Yeah, that's rad. But yeah, there really isn't a makeover montage unless you consider putting like taking the mask off being like a makeover thing.
But is there a montage there? No,
not really a montage. Yeah, I'm going to have to give this a 2.
A 2?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess just for the reveal of the
mask.
Hospital room gets a montage.
Yeah.
Is that a montage?
Gets a makeover. Yeah.
I'm going to have to give it a 0.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 0, too. Ouch. All right. Now, our next series of categories are ones that our guests have come up with. So you, at the end of this, will be coming up with your own scoring category that from here on out will
become canon.
Oh,
we
my
didn't
God.
Do that right. But
we
all
didn't
right.
do that right. Oh, boy. So our first category is created by Jenny Pearson, Over-the-Top Wardrobe.
I mean,
1 to 100. Is there any? Everyone's very
they're sort of like
neutral tones.
Yeah, they're sort of like on point.
It's all Patagonia or like J. Crew.
There wasn't anything that crazy at that rave that they were at.
Right. That was a little understated.
Everyone's so stuffy at that rave. Like it's people in like blazers at this like rave.
Yeah.
But in the cleanest bathroom.
It's an insanely pristine bathroom for a rave. Did the high altitude parachute jump, they got some cool suits. Yeah, those suits are cool. But yeah, it's not like over the top wardrobe. What was
over
it?
The top wardrobe.
Over the top wardrobe. I think it's probably pretty unover the top. I'm gonna say 40.
You are a generous scorer. John, how Mission Impossible Fallout for? Well, there's a Solomon Lane's in a straight jacket.
That's true.
Pretty over the top.
Okay, we define that term differently. I have to give it like a 5. I don't think there's really much costume wise to walk away from with this.
I think a 5 is fair. I'm going to give it a 5 as well. All right, next category from Tony Charlene. Does it hold up? Whew, it's been a year.
It's been a year.
Does Mission Impossible Fallout hold up to today's standards?
Yes, it does. This is not a movie that's firmly ensconced in the year 2018. In 2019, it still plays.
Yeah. They do have to like like thread a line like politically of like, because in a lot of ways I was like agreeing with these anarchists. I was like, oh, they're totally, the system is corrupt. We should bring this system down. Like these governments are terrible.
So they have to, what they have to do is they have to make their plan so nefarious where they're killing millions of civilians.
Yes.
You know, like that has to be the only way they can do it. But then also there are things where they're like, you know, Angela Bassett's character is like, I just spoke with the president and the president has signed off and just like, wait, who is the president in this world? Just think about Trump getting briefed on an IMF thing.
Who did what?
Yeah. We lost some guys out there. It was, you know,
big deal.
It was an IMF mission. They knew what they were getting into. I think it was I'm giving it the numerical score.
Yeah.
Does it hold up? 100.
100.
Yeah, I'll give it a 98 only because we haven't had that much time
away from it.
I'll give it 100. I love this movie. It's like my fourth time watching it. It's great. All right. Our next category from Drew Fuday Singh, drag queen inspiration. Anything in this movie that would inspire drag queens?
Really just Vanessa Kirby, maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
Angela Bassett.
Rebecca Ferguson has some cool, you know, actiony get-ups, but nothing
like
really.
Blaze. She's like
they're
business.
They're pretty plain. Yeah.
Business casual. I think this one sort of goes with the whole like over-the-top wardrobe. And like there's nothing that I think someone could do that I'd be like, that's Mission Impossible Fallout.
Right.
Where like I would know like that specifically what the quote
unless
is.
Unless you dressed up as the helicopter.
Yeah.
With like the cargo is like your purse.
Sure, but it maybe, yeah.
Sexy Michelle Monaghan's doctor character.
Yeah.
Working for Doctors Without Borders.
Doctors Without Borders. Track, yeah.
Well, Alec, wrote this down. Wrote down Doctors Without Borders drag ? On a piece of paper before I said it and handed it over. That's amazing. I will say that
that's your manifesto. I'm Wolf Blitzer. I'm just receiving this.
I think I would say this is a 12.
Well, I always think a creative drag queen can find inspiration in anything. Will it be good? No, this isn't, the category is not good drag queen inspiration. The category is just drag queen inspiration. So I think you could dress up as a helicopter and then maybe you have a friend out there as the
other
helicopter.
But is there something that you could be like, though, that's definitively Mission Impossible?
No.
Helicopter.
If any of the wardrobe is recognizable in a vacuum.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I don't think so either. The only thing I could think I was like, is if you somehow did a reveal where you rip off a face.
Oh,
that would be the only thing that I think.
That'd be great.
I could see a drag queen.
Evie Oddly would do that, I bet.
I'm sure she would. I'll give it a 10 just for that.
I'm going to give it a 15. I think there's maybe something.
Yeah.
Okay. You're willing to dig around for some more.
All right. Now, here's a category. I think, boy, this is a category for this movie or what? Caper music.
Oh, my God.
Mark Sam Rosenthal came up. I mean, does Mission Impossible have caper music or what?
Yeah, it's got that theme. Yeah. It's 100.
It's got the theme. And then also, too, they are pulling capers. I mean, call them. They're not stealing jewels, but they are like, you know, stealing documents or you know,
plutonium.
Exactly. Yeah, there are heist elements throughout.
It's
and I think
not
the
a
score
jewel.
The score is fucking awesome. I am gonna give this a 95.
95.
Okay,
you're giving it 100, John?
I'm gonna say 100. I think it's a classic theme song. It's used great. I love it, and it is exciting.
It's very Lorne Balfe.
Yes,
did the score. Don't know who that is. Never heard of him.
This was his. I think this is the first Mission Impossible movie he scored, and it's great.
It's very Hans Zimmer esque.
Right.
I'm gonna give it I'd give it a 95. Yeah. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Also, maybe that theme could be drag queen inspiration.
Absolutely.
Right. Why does the inspiration have to be visual? Yeah. It could be
aural. Wow. Currently, Mission Impossible Fallout has the highest score in caper music out of any movie.
Wow.
Even the one that inspired the category.
What was the one that inspired the category?
9 to 5.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a good one.
All right. Oh, here's another good one for Mission Impossible. Teamwork by Lenham Parham.
Oh my God!
Is there teamwork?
There's great teamwork.
Yeah,
that's the whole theme of the big third act set piece is the team working in unison and all trusting each other because they can't communicate via radio anymore. This is 100.
100 in teamwork.
I'm going to have to go a little lower because there's so many like, haha, you thought I was a member of the team, but you're wrong.
That's
happens
true.
A whole lot.
That's
so I'm going to give it.
You're saying it's like almost like saying maybe you shouldn't trust everyone on your team. It's an anti-teamwork.
I feel like there is an element of Mission Impossible where you always have to watch your back.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you're a spy, right?
Yeah, like you can never... You're in a world
like, of masks.
You think Angela Bassett, you were friends, but then you're not, but then you are, but then who knows? I mean, then what face are you wearing? Is that you? Are you someone else?
This is a drag show backstage.
Okay, you really want me to give this a higher score for drag queen inspiration.
Is Angela Bassett mad at you? What face am I going to wear? It's the exact same thing.
Which helicopter am I?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to give it a 60.
60?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it an 80 on teamwork. There we go. All right. Next category. Likely to recommend to a gay person. Mm. Brian Gallivan submitted that. How likely, if you knew a gay person, Nick? I'm sure you knew one.
Yes. In this hypothetical situation.
Would you say, hey, you're gay. You need to watch Mission Impossible Fallout. You probably wouldn't say it like that.
No, yeah.
One would hope.
One would hope.
That feels inappropriate.
It's 2019.
I would recommend this movie to anyone who likes action movies. So I would say... I'd give this an 80. How about that? Because there are people who just don't like action movies.
Sure. Absolutely. Yes. 80 is very noble.
Yeah, that seems good to me. Like, I wouldn't be like, guys, next brunch, we were watching Mission Impossible Fallout. We were talking about it. But I would be like, Henry Cavill.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
So what score are you giving?
I'm going to give it an 80 as well.
Wow. I would recommend this movie to everybody. I'm going to give it 100.
Okay, wow.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. One more category and then it's your submission.
Oh,
so
boy.
Our last category is submitted by Tony Rodriguez. How much felt is in the movie?
Ooh, boy. I wish I had a better eye for fabric on film. I don't know if there's a lot of felt.
I don't think there's any, really. Yeah.
There's like straps and Velcro, but that's not the same thing.
That's not
thing.
Felt.
No.
Felt is like what makes a Muppet.
Yeah. No, there's not much felt. I'm going to say, I think this is a... I there might be some felt somewhere, so I'm going to give this a 1.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's what I was saying. I was going to give it a 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it a 0.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
Felt is not highlighted.
Felt not is a not. Plot point.
All right, Nick, now we're up to you. What category would you like to add?
Okay. I feel like I've gotten from some of the prior categories that these are fans of these movies who are maybe tipping the scales a little bit.
Could be, but it's up to you.
And I am going to play that game.
Okay.
By adding the category of facial hair.
Facial hair. Okay, that's actually a good one for this world.
As far as facial hair is concerned, I mean, it's all Cavill, and Cavill is, that's some of the best facial hair in any movie I've ever
seen. It's an iconic mustache.
Yeah. I'm going to give this 100.
It's such a great mustache that it hurt another movie.
Yeah.
I mean, take that, Magnum P.I.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not just Cavill. I mean, Simon Pegg's got his little scruff.
That's true.
And then what's his name? Sean Harris has his little weird...
Sure, a lot of...
mental illness beard.
We got a lot of varieties.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, he does have that big crazy beard. In the previous one, he was clean shaven.
And doesn't Wes Bentley have a little something?
Oh, he looks like a wolf man.
He looks great.
Or like a Dracula.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He looks like he should be in a castle haunting Transylvania to me.
Yeah.
And then he looked a little gaunt. I was worried about Wes Bentley a little, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, but I liked his casting here.
It's a fun choice.
And I like that they make him not just a dipshit. Like, I like that he's he's like smart
a
enough
noble
to know.
Person.
Yeah, he knows what's going on with Tom Cruise. I was like, oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Facial hair, all about Cavill. I'm going to give it a 99.
Hell yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think I said it best myself. It affects it.
Oh, boy.
I got to give it 100. Okay. All right. Now we're going on to sheet 2 of our express sheet.
So these are not necessarily like opinion ones. They're more sort of like, is there, isn't there?
These are objective.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Straight actors playing gay roles, -5% for each instance. Well,
there are no gay characters in this.
That's a big zero.
So it's fine.
Does this have a positive portrayal of homosexuality?
It has non-portrayal, so yeah. it's not positive, but it's a 15% bonus.
If
okay.
You have okay. It. But I don't think it. I don't. I would think say it doesn't apply for that.
It doesn't get it.
Qualify for that
we've
bonus.
We've done 8 movies, only 2 movies have had positive portrayals
wow.
of homosexuality.
What were they?
The Kids Are All Right and The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Mm. And The Muppets Take Manhattan was a bit of a
controversial. I said Bert and Ernie encounter.
Sure,
but they're not really characters in this movie.
They are portrayed positively. All right, sure. And then our last one. Is this the movie Cruising? -50%.
It is not the movie Cruising.
Not the movie Cruising.
So it does not lose 50%. Of its score.
All right, let me tabulate our final score. Out of a possible 1,250 points, Mission Impossible Fallout has scored 485, giving it a percentage of 38.80, putting it in fourth place.
Hey,
all right.
It's gayer than Hoosiers, but not as gay as The Kids Are All Right.
That sounds right.
Fair enough.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
So wait, so what are the top five now?
The top five, top five. it's so hard to read on the screen. Oh, Hoosiers
is number five.
Number five. Number four, Mission Impossible Fallout. Number three, The Kids Are All Right. Number two, 9 to 5. Number one, The Muppets Take Manhattan. So Muppets Take Manhattan stay strong.
Who will dethrone the Muppets?
they're up there. So how could we make Mission Impossible Fallout gayer? What could we do to make it like even gayer? I think during the bathroom scene, like clothes were being like ripped off as they were doing it.
Yeah. What if in a different stall, there were two guys fucking?
Yeah. They just peek their head out.
How great would that be in the midst of this huge fight? These two guys who are half naked just are like, oh my God.
It's just like a B story going on. We'll just cut to the reactions.
Or they just start jacking off to the fight.
Yeah. One of them stays around.
If that was also, if that fight was kind of like an Eastern Promises thing where instead of a men's room, it was a sauna and both those guys were all natural, just like brawling, we're seeing some dong hanging. I mean, that would really be something.
Dong. Yeah,
this is good. More hanging dongs.
That would definitely make a gear. I think Vanessa Kirby had a torch song.
Yeah, if she sang a number.
Right.
Sure.
That would do it. Or if that rave was an actual like gay rave. It's pretty straight looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, we couldn't. That's it.
That's it. We made it gayer.
All right. Well, now it's time. We're nearing the end of our show. Don't worry. You're almost out
of here. I'm having a great time. This is
a morning podcast. You can do this for 3 more hours.
Right. Exactly. We're not even approaching a third of the runtime of Mission Impossible Fallout.
That's
so
true. I asked on our Instagram last week for drag queen names based on summer movies. What would you have? So please chime in at any moment. But I'll go through some of the responses I got. At Devin Daniel Green said Midsommar.
Okay. Oh, I like that.
That's a good one.
Did you see Midsommar?
I didn't. That's how you say it?
Midsommar.
I've been saying Midsommar.
I think you don't have to say it that way. I mostly heard it said Midsommar or Midsommar, something like that, but yeah.
Midsommar.
I heard someone say it that way yesterday, and I was like, oh, that's how you say it.
Do they ever say it? They do say it in the movie, I think.
I guess so. I don't remember.
I haven't seen it.
And then Mr. Wayne Henry, at Mr. Wayne Henry, said Megan Funamirez, which I had no idea what he was talking about.
What is that reference?
Then it's a reference to, he sent me a photo. I asked for a follow-up. Like, what is this? He sent a photo of Stalker Channy in Greece.
What? Say the name again?
Megan Funamirez.
Oh, you making fun of me, Riz?
Megan Funamirez.
You making fun of me, Riz? That's a thing that, someone says.
But that's not referencing
Is that from Greece?
Current summer
movie.
It's
from Greece.
I guess Greece came out in summer.
I guess so, yeah.
It feels summery, even though it's about a year in high school. Right. It ends in the summer.
And then at Mad Marchain said Rocket Fran.
Rocket Fran's a good
that's
one.
That's great.
Rocket Fran. I was a big fan of Rocket. So please reach out to us on Instagram or Twitter at @twooldqueens.
Or you can email us at twooldqueens@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought. Do you have any questions, any opinions,
anything
please
rate, review.
We have all these accounts, guys. Let's use them.
Nick, thanks so much for coming on the show. Anything you'd like to promote at this time?
A delight. I had a great time. Please, I would love to come back some point if you have repeat guests. I will say this. I'm a you introduced me as podcasting royalty. I think that's a little over the top, but I will say that I am a guy who has two podcasts now. Doughboys, the podcast about chain restaurants, hosted by me and Mike Mitchell. If you like Byzantine scoring systems, we have a similar thing in as far as reviewing chain restaurants. And then also, I have a new podcast with Heather Ann Campbell and Matt Apodaca on Earwolf called How Did This Get Played? We review the worst and weirdest video games of all time. So, those are two places you can hear me talk into a microphone.
Have you done those Mission Impossible and those NES ones? Remember those?
We have not.
Based on the TV show?
Yeah, those games are insane. And then also there's a Mission Impossible N64 game, which just sucks. It's so bad. But it came out during this period where there weren't a lot of N64 games getting released, so like a lot of kids bought it. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some real Mission Impossible garbage. It'd be great if there was a good video game in that franchise.
Dare to dream. Well, that's it for us today. I've been Mark Rennie.
And I'm John Flynn.
Goodbye.
Now it's time for credits. Produced by Alex Arche. Music by Danny Cohen. Art by Connie Shin. See you next Wednesday. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.